benefit. Most workers in the state don't have the ability to take paid time off when somebody in their family has cancer and needs to be taken care of. A lot of Minnesotans, when a member of their family is sick right now, they have to choose between staying at home and taking care of their loved one and not being able to pay their mortgage, or going to work and having their loved one not get the care that they need. But January 1st next year, that all changes.
That's the former House Speaker, Melissa Hortman, earlier this year. So painful to see her hear her voice. And it was Hope, the daughter of the Hoffmans, who were shot multiple times, her mother that protected her, who saved so many by calling 911. You knew Hope. Can you talk about her significance in what she did in these last 20 seconds?
I am not surprised at all that Hope will have the courage in that moment to make that call and do what she had to do. She is the only daughter of a loving couple that just adore her. And she has been working in multiple issues on behalf of people with disabilities, just like her father.
I'm going to have I thank you so much for your participation in today's show. Patricia Torres-Ray, former Minnesota senator, worked closely with Minnesota former House Speaker Melissa Hortman and State Senator John Hoffman. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.
KABU Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operation and programming of KABU in accordance with the requirements of the Communication Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KABU Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kabu.fm. The Policy and Governance Committee meets on the third Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting can be found on our website at kabu.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
It's time to pack your bags and join us for Camp KABU. Make a summer of memories with KABU and support grassroots media by becoming a member today. Go to kabu.fm/give to help us reach our $50,000 goal by June 29th. Thank you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, listener-supported community radio.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KABU Evening News.
Coming up on this summer membership drive special of the KABU Evening News, the No Kings protest attracted thousands of people to the Portland waterfront.
Protests against immigration and customs enforcement continue at the ICE facility in Portland.
And two Portlanders are circulating a petition to get ICE permits revoked to continue operations in the city.
Good evening. This is the KABU Evening News for Monday, June 16th, 2025. KABU is currently in our summer membership drive, and we'd like to urge you to become a member by going online to kboo.fm/give. I'm Dave Johnson.
And I'm Ron Bronson. After a peaceful rally of 50,000 people, 18,000 people marched 3.2 miles on a route snaking through downtown and across the Hawthorne and Morrison bridges. On the way, the east-going column of the crossing of the Hawthorne Bridge could see the west marchers going and heading back towards the Battleship Monument for concluding rally. Alan Niven has more on this story.
Pacifica Broadcast Network.
And their trope about cutting waste, fraud, and abuse is nothing more than a feeble attempt to veil the truth. The fact of the matter is their big ugly tax scam will add up to $4 trillion to the deficit. And we know that wasteful spending does not stop there. What's Trump doing today? He's holding a North Korea-style military parade that will cost Americans up to $100 million. But let's be clear. We are all here today to say he is no king, he is no monarch, and his dangerous delusions have gone on for far too long. And now, under Trump's direction, U.S. citizens, yes, actual American citizens, are being detained. And immigrants with legal protected status, like Kilmar Abrego Garcia, are being illegally deported without due process. Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, Trump is stoking unrest. Just this week, my colleague, Senator Alex Padilla, asked Secretary Noem a question at a press conference, and he barely got his name out when he was attacked, pinned to the ground, and handcuffed in the office building where he works for doing his job and holding the Trump administration accountable. If they can commit this kind of inhumane violence to an elected serving senator, just imagine what they will do to us, to our workers and business owners. He has the audacity to label protesters in LA as insurrectionists? The guy who sent insurrectionists on a violent rampage in our nation's capital on January 6th. This is unconstitutional, un-American, and unacceptable. You are the real patriots. You hold dear the promise of a bright future for America. You understand the gravity of this moment. We will not be silenced with handcuffs or hatred. We have a long road ahead of us, and that road to justice starts today. We are here to take a stand for that which is right. We are here to stand up for justice. We are here for the truth. And no small-minded imposter in the White House will ever defeat us. Gracias, y si se puede.
Organize, vote, and yes, hold us accountable, not out of anger, but out of love for democracy, what democracy can and should be. You all know this is why we're here today. We need everyone to stand up, to stand clearly on the side of justice. I will not comply with tyranny in any form. And I ask you, will you stand with me?
Yes!
So, let's say them again together. No king?
No king!
No cover?
No cover!
No roll over?
No roll over!
We resist?
We resist!
We rise?
We rise!
America said hell no to monarchies more than 250 years ago, when we rose up against a tyrannical king, tossed out his tariffed tea, and said, no kings, forever. This narcissist in chief slashing Americans' earned benefits and lifelines for our most vulnerable, all while demanding a $45 million birthday parade to praise himself. Our forefathers founded this country to be free of mad kings like him forever. No kings.
No kings!
I'm Alan Niven, reporting from Beaverton, Oregon, for KBOO Radio and the Pacifica Broadcast Network.
After the No Kings protest on Saturday, Hundreds of people joined the protest against the Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in Portland. Reporter Hannah Francis has more on the story.
On Saturday, after thousands showed up for the No Kings protest in Portland and hundreds of thousands more across the country, a few hundred people made their way to the ICE, or Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility, in Portland. People have been camped out outside of the ICE facility at Southwest McAdam for just over a week, despite repeated efforts by Portland Police Bureau and the ICE agents to use chemical warfare to remove protesters from the area. The protesters remain there today. Their hope is to inhibit ICE's ability to do business as usual and to bring awareness to the facility from City Council and those that might be able to remove ICE from the city of Portland. On Saturday, several police officers pulled their guns and pointed them at protesters, but so far, no full metal jacket bullets have been fired at protesters. Every few hours, ICE and PPB push the crowd back by shooting pepper bullets and rubber bullets at protesters, as well as releasing canisters of CS gas, otherwise known as tear gas, on them.
So could you just tell me a little bit about the last few days and what's happened yesterday and today, and where, obviously where we are also is a good idea.
Hi, we're here at the ICE Detention Center in Southwest Waterfront in Portland, and we have a bunch of Occupy protesters that are sitting here ensuring that their family members aren't being ripped apart. Every night they have about five unmarked vehicles that will leave base and pick up people that are just going to their jobs, that are just working in warehouses, and they will take them to the Tacoma location, where they will either be disappeared or sent to El Salvador. It is quite a grim situation, quite honestly. There has not been a single night where they have not tear gassed and pepperballed us. We have comrades doing everything that we can to bring out supplies. There was one thing that Lenin talks about in a lot of his writings, where there are decades where nothing happens and then there are weeks where decades happen. These are the weeks where decades happen. And it's very important that you check out and see how you can bring supplies. We need masks. We always need masks.
Mm-hmm. Will you give me a specific lowdown of today, specifically, what's been happening?
So at around 11 p.m., they started setting up floodlights up on the ceiling with a complete overwatch from the top of the building. And every civilian vehicle appearing, the vehicle that probably works clerical work, has been able to exit with full arm support, where they'll just tear gas us and pepperball us to make sure that their corks can get out.
Wow. Yeah. And what about the people? What have the numbers of people look like today?
Earlier in the afternoon, we had quite a few scattered numbers, and then progressively, as all the protests have ended and ended up here, we've had comrades quadruple our numbers in terms of what we're used to.
What do you need specifically right now?
Mask, water, and saline solution. Those are the three most important things. Do not bring milk. We do not put milk in our eyes. That's how you make bacteria. It's really bad.
Yeah, that's how you make cheese.
Thank you. That's how you make cheese. That is how you make cheese.
Anything else you'd like to get out there?
Don't be afraid. If this is your first protest and the cops see that we're not afraid, they're afraid. Do not be afraid, comrades. Bring a mask, bring a black t-shirt, get out here.
Thank you.
Of course.
The use of CS gas is prohibited under the international treaties, like the Geneva Convention. But the U.S. government uses it on its own people for crowd control. Dozens of peaceful protesters and press have been pepper sprayed, shot with bullets, beat up, and arrested. Some, like a person I spoke with, for simply reading poetry.
I was reading a poem over there on the sidewalk, not even on their property, and they shot the pepper bullets right at my chest. Yeah, for reading a poem on the sidewalk.
Protesters are constantly sharing information to keep everyone informed and prepared for the next way that the police may try to remove them, either through raids for arrests, volleys of bullets and gas canisters, or even by way of inserting disruptors into the crowd.
So right now there is at least five police cars that are circling the area, and then there is a big unmarked black van up on the overpass where about like 20 cops just standing on the side of it, like holding on. And that is exactly what they do when they're staging to start arresting people. Last night, thankfully, no one got arrested. The night before, it was 10 people, though. And I was watching the whole time, and they did not do what the police said that they did. They pepper sprayed them and let them sit there for about 8 minutes before they got medical attention. And the cops would not let us or our medics help them. And it's upsetting. It's really upsetting. And the things that are happening right now scare me. And I couldn't imagine that people would continue, like would see people out here with this much like care and still continue to attack them.
The protesters are still out there today at the ICE facility on Southwest McAdam. They plan to not leave until ICE leaves Portland. For KBOO Evening News, I'm Hannah Francis.
As protesters bring attention to the actions of ICE, people who have been fighting for ICE to leave Portland for over a decade use their experience to leverage different tactics. One of those is a petition to revoke ICE's permit to operate from the city to operations downtown. This petition has over 8,000 signatures. It was brought to City Council in early May when it had just over 2,000 signatures. There are now no available appointments at City Council until September. If City Council wants to take action on this petition, they'll have to bring it forward themselves. Reporter Hannah Francis talks to Pedro and Susie about their petition, why they created it, and more on this story.
For over a week, protesters have been camped outside of the ICE facility at Southwest McAdam in downtown Southwest Portland. There was a petition launched to appeal and revoke the city's permit that lets ICE continue its operations in the city. Susie and her partner Pedro were the ones who launched this petition about 6 months ago. The petition now has over 8,000 signatures.
There's currently a petition circulating for Portland City Council to appeal and revoke the 2011 permit for the operations of the ICE field station in Portland, Oregon. And you two are the ones who have made this happen. What's the current goal for the number of signatures?
So yeah, the goal is to get it to 10,000. And then the only other layer to that is that having learned a lot of lessons from the previous occupation, the goal is to make sure that our comrades who are out there on the streets doing work that we did when we were a little bit younger, not to say that we'll never go out there again, but doing work that we've already done, we don't want to see people hurt and injured by the police and actually end up once again with no gain and no win. And so this is a petition that is made with the goal of having long-term change and accomplishing a goal that is a common goal for everyone who's out there. You want to add to that?
Yeah, thank you, Sue. Thank you, Hannah, for having us, and greetings to the audience. I think the main goal with getting signatures, the main goal would be to have ICE out of Portland, simply not allowing ICE to operate within the city limits. And I think that we are, I think Portland specifically is in a place with very specific conditions that may enable or allow for something such as a petition to move forward and have this done, and have this permit be revoked, given that this permit was given to ICE back in 2011. This was a decision done by City Council and Portland City Government back then in 2011. The people who voted to have this permit move forward and allow ICE to operate in the city are no longer in office. We know what ICE have, what the role of, what the role of ICE have been during the last, since the beginning of the agency, which is to violate human rights and to target immigrants in our community. And I think there are some specific conditions. Now we have a new city council. This is the first time that we are, not only because they are newly elected, but we have a new, the city, the way it works right now is differently. is different than the way it used to, and now there are more city council members as part of city government. And so I think there are some very specific and unusual opportunities here to have this being rectified and revoke this permit, which enables an agency to operate causing harm in our community. And so there is a chance, there is an opportunity for ICE to be kicked out of the city. And of course, the main goal, long-term goal, would be to abolish ICE. But I think whatever that we can do in the meantime, in this case, helping to revoke a permit to prevent a detention facility to continue from operating, I think that would be very important and would be helpful for our community.
To listen for more from Susie and Pedro, stay tuned for News in Depth this week. I'm Hannah Francis for the KBOO Evening News.
You are listening to a summer membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our goal is to raise $50,000 by June 29th. We'd like to remind you that you can renew your KBOO membership or become a new member at any time during this program by going online to kboo.fm/give. Stay tuned after the newscast for an in-depth report on the new artist collective, The Haven. At 6, it's Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. And at 7, Hard Knock Radio. Currently, it's 74 degrees and sunny. Expect a low tonight of 50. And tomorrow, it'll be sunny with a high of 80 with a low of 59. Today in history, in 1971, rapper and activist Tupac Shakur was born. The quote of the day is from Tupac. He said, quote, "I'm not saying I'm going to change the world, but I guarantee that I will spark the brain that will change the world," end quote.
Environmental groups are hoping that the 1% for Wildlife bill, currently under consideration in the State House, will be a solution to the long-term problem of how to fund Oregon's State Wildlife Action Plan. The bill would raise the transient lodging tax by 1%. Isabel Charles has more on this story.
In the last few weeks of the Oregon legislative session, wildlife advocates say the state has an opportunity to make needed progress in conservation efforts with three bills that are still in play. The 1% for Wildlife bill would protect more than 300 imperiled species by funding the State Wildlife Action Plan, which is a federally mandated blueprint for conserving fish and other wildlife. The bill would fund the plan by raising the state transient lodging tax by 1%, up to 2.5%. The change makes sense, says Sristi Kamal with the Western Environmental Law Center, as much of Oregon tourism revolves around outdoor recreation.
Oregon has one of the lowest state DLD in the whole country, and we are a natural resource rich state. So to not invest back into the resource seems very short-sighted for us.
Another bill would provide landowners non-lethal tools to manage beavers. A third would fund three new state wildlife coexistence biologist positions, as well as grants for wildlife rehabilitation centers. All three bills are currently in committee. People in the tourism industry be a blow to business to increase the transient lodging tax. But Kamal points to research showing that consumers make choices about what to purchase based on the cost, more so tax.
Is a $2 increase in a $200 room at the Oregon coast going to change a person's mind on whether they're going to come to Oregon or not.
Kamal adds the only money going towards the State Wildlife Action Plan, which is implemented by the Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife, currently comes from the federal government. She says since this funding will likely be cut by the Trump administration, the plan is in dire need of state support. I'm Isabel Charlet, Oregon News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Two Minnesota lawmakers are shot in a politically motivated attack, as experts say political violence is becoming more common. Millions of people protest President Trump's authoritarian policies on the same day as the military parade in Washington. With these stories and more, it's Edwin J. Vieira with 2025 Talks.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
This was an act of targeted political violence. Peaceful discourse is the foundation of our democracy. We don't settle our differences with violence or at gunpoint.
Minnesota Governor Tim Walz says now is a dangerous time given the politically motivated shooting of two state Democratic lawmakers. State Representative Melissa Hortman, State Senator John Hoffman, and their respective spouses were shot over the weekend. Suspect Vance Bolter fled the scene dressed as a police officer after exchanging gunfire with police officers. Law enforcement says they found a hit list of more than 70 names, mostly of Democratic lawmakers, in his car. Bolter's online history paints him as an opponent of abortion and gay rights. Political scientists say violent acts, from the arson attack on the Pennsylvania governor's mansion to Saturday's shooting at a Utah No Kings rally, may mean we're entering an ugly moment. David Schultz of Hamline University says it reminds him of when several leaders were assassinated in the 60s. He says growing social isolation and division can feed conspiracy theories and radicalization.
Falsity travels more rapidly and more deeply than truth, and the relative anonymity or distance of social media also emboldens people to radicalize. Put all that together, that gets us part of the recipe of where we are in our society right now.
President Trump's military parade Saturday marked the 250th anniversary of the U.S. Army, despite fears it could politicize America's traditionally nonpartisan armed forces. The White House says 250,000 people attended, but outside estimates put the number closer to 20,000. Critics point out the parade cost as much as $45 million, mostly because of damage to D.C. streets. A recent poll finds most American adults say it wasn't a good use of funds. Others point to administration cuts to veterans' benefits. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office estimates the GOP budget reconciliation bill would cut benefits by more than $35 billion over a decade. Organizers estimate more than 5 million people participated in the more than 2,000 No Kings protests on the same day. Trump supporters say the president is defending constitutional values and using lawful powers to advance his agenda, but Micah Pulliam of Indiana says she decided to join a march due to concerns about the president's authoritarian behavior.
America hasn't had a king. We rejected kings years and years and years ago, and Trump is acting like a king, like he can make all the decisions and do what he wants. That's not how America works.
One surprise was how many rallies took place in Republican states. Rural West Virginia has strong ties to fossil fuels, and nearly 70% there voted for Trump, but the state's dozen No Kings rallies drew thousands of people. Organizers say Montana held twice that number of events. Rose, who asks to be identified only by her first name, is a co-founder of Missoula Resist, which she says supports science, human rights, and active community building. She says rural Montana is a lot more purple than red.
It is a reflection of the fact that we are independent-minded, and we are willing to say when someone has gone too far and when the government is no longer reflecting the will of the people.
Iran and Israel continue military strikes, killing more than 200 and raising oil prices. Neither side seems ready to stop. Israel says it's reducing Iran's nuclear capability. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Writer, actress, comedian, and activist Jana Schmieding is known for her work with Native-themed series such as Rutherford Falls and Reservation Dogs, and she's also an alum of the University of Oregon. With that story and more, it's Brian Bull with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Brian Bull. Writer, actress, comedian, and activist Jana Schmieding is known for her work with Native-themed series such as Rutherford Falls and Reservation Dogs, but she's also a duck. The University of Oregon alum is this year's commencement speaker and spent this weekend reconnecting with her campus community. Schmieding graduated in 2005 with a degree in theater arts. On Saturday, she and her family tied on aprons and cooked fry bread tacos at the UO Longhouse for Native students, alum, and special dignitaries, including President Carl Schultz. Schmieding says it turns out Schultz's daughter is a fan of her work and there's a new project underway.
We just shot a pilot, also created by Sierra Teller Ornelas, Bobby Wilson, and Jackie Kali'ia'a, three comedy writers. Sierra was the co-creator of Rutherford Falls, and it's a community center comedy that takes place in Oakland, but we shot it in Portland, and if the show gets picked up by NBC for a series run, we will shoot it in Portland.
For all of her comedy styling, Schmieding says she takes her role as this year's commencement speaker for the class of 25 very seriously. She gave a preview summary of her speech.
Special shout out to the Native grads, and I'm talking about Indigenous joy. I'm talking about joy in general and just the importance of maintaining joy as resistance, joy as an important part of sustaining our movements, and joy as a creative practice.
Schmieding says the collective struggle she and others faced as people of color really motivated her through her university experience, so coming back after 20 years, efforts full circle. The City of Hoonah and Hoonah Heritage Foundation unveiled a brand new 21-foot totem pole during a ceremony at the Hoonah Harbor at the end of May. The totem pole, called a kutia in Lingit, was designed and raised to honor the community's rich fishing history and traditions. KTOO's Clarice Larson was there and has a story.
It's called the Fisherman's Honor Totem Pole. Carved into the yellow cedar log are depictions of different fishing methods that locals use.
You have the gill netter, and then you have the rod and reeler.
Master artist Gordon Greenwald describes the design of the brand new totem pole that now stands at Hoonah's Harbor. He speaks through a microphone to a crowd of more than 100 people who gathered for the ceremony.
So this is what you're looking at. The Hoonah fishing people. All of us in the past, all of us in the future, and all of us now.
Many Hoonah residents attended the event, and a catamaran brought dozens of people from Juneau for the ceremony. Fishing is deeply intertwined with the economy and identity of Hoonah. During the 1950s and 60s, Hoonah became known as the home of the million-dollar fleet. That's because of the local fishermen's highly lucrative skills and success on the water. Hoonah's Vice Mayor Amelia Wilson thanked the crowd for celebrating the kutia and the meaning behind it.
And to see so many of our fishermen and fisherwomen here really just makes me so proud to be honoring all of you and that legacy that we have of thousands and thousands of years of amazing fishermen.
David Shakely, a speaker